You're listening to a UC San Diego podcast.
So I just want to finish what I started last time, and then I start, quiz one. So in the end of last lecture, you had this graph, right? So this is from last lecture. You had this, it was like this. This is minus 1. This is 1. This is 2. And this is 1. And so this is the graph of f. This is x. This is f of x. And from here, we wanted to graph. So this is f of x such that so we graphed it last lecture and. So f of 0 is 1, so this is 0 and 1. So this point, let's say this is 1. So this point must be on the graph of capital F, because f of 0 is 1. And then I used the table, and then I said, when x is, this is 0. So when x is between 0 and 1, this is negative, little f is negative, and I said when little f is negative, it means that the derivative of capital F is negative, and a derivative being negative means that the function is decreasing. So from after, so between 0 and 1, in this interval, let's say this is 1. Between 0 and 1, I know that this must be decreasing. So it cannot go, it cannot increase, right? It has to decrease, so it has to be like this. And then as I said, it could be either concave up like this, or it could be concave down like that. This is concave down, but both of them are decreasing. But it's not concave down because this is increasing. So by table, if this is increasing, then it's concave up. Between 0 and 1, little f is increasing. And if that's increasing, it means that this is concave up. So it must be this, like this. And then it goes until 0, sorry, until 1. After 1, between 1 and 2, little f is positive, right? So f of 1 is 0. At 1, this is 0, but after 1 is positive. So after 1, little f being positive means that the derivative is positive. So capital F must be increasing. So it must, after this, it must increase. Right? Until 2, and then again it must be concave up. It cannot increase like this because it's concave down. It must, because this is again increasing. Little f increasing means that capital F is a concave up. And so you just have to do more examples to get used to graphing these things. So, and then I said, actually, I can determine what is f of 1, right? I don't know what is this. What is this? So how do I know that it goes like this? Maybe it goes much further. Maybe it goes down and then goes here, right? Actually, I can find that using the fundamental theorem of calculus. And in order to find that, I can use this, that f of 1 minus f of 0 is the integral from 0 to 1 of fx dx. So this tells me that f of 1 is equal to f of 0 plus, so I can bring f of 0 to the other side, and that gives me this. Right? And I do know f of 0. F of 0 is given. F of 0 is 1. So this is 1 plus, and that integral is the area. This is the graph. So the integral is the area under the curve from 0 to 1. That's this area. And that area is, that's a triangle. So, but it's minus because it's under the x-axis. So I have to put a minus sign over there. So that gives me minus half times 1 times 1. So that's 1 minus a half. So that's a half. So this point is a half. F of 1. So this is capital F. This is a graph of capital F. So capital F of 1 must be half. And similarly, I can find capital F at any other point. I can find F of 2. This is 2. What is F of 2? I can find that using the same argument. So F of 2 minus F of 0. So using the same argument, you get F of 2 is equal to f of 0 plus integral from 0 to 2 fx dx, right? Just instead of 1, I use 2. So f of 2 minus f of 0 is integral from 0. Again, using fundamental theorem of calculus, you get that. And this is equal to f of 0 is 1, integral from 0 to 2 is this area and that area. And this is positive, this is negative. And by symmetry, now you can use symmetry. These two are equal, but this is positive, this is negative. So they cancel out. So this is just 0. This integral is 0. So this is 1. So this point is in the same level, is in the same level at the original point. And get that. So that's the graph. So here, do you want to find do you want to find a formula for capital F? Yes, you can do that. So her question is, actually, in this example, we can find exactly a formula for capital F. We can, because we can find a formula for this line. This is a line. I can find a formula for this line. And after I have the formula, the antiderivative gives me capital F. But in general, this is not a simple shape. This is a line, but in general, it could be complicated. And maybe I cannot find the antiderivative. Then you can use the area under the curve. So in this example, what if I say find f of x such that f prime of x is f of x, so capital F, I want it to be antiderivative, and f of 0 to be 0. So the same, I want antiderivative, but instead of that, I want f of 0 to be 0, right? So instead of this point passing through 1, I want it to pass through 0. I don't want this point to be on the curve. I want this point to be on the curve. So as I said, this is again an antiderivative, and all antiderivatives are obtained from each other by a vertical shift. So I just need to shift this vertically such that it passes through this point, right? So I want, again, the same antiderivative of little f. So all antiderivatives, it's just plus c, right? Plus c means shift it vertically. So I can just shift it vertically so that this point crosses through here. So all I need to do is shift this curve down such that this point comes here, right? So I get this. if I shift that vertically downwards, I get 0, this is 2, this is 1, and this is minus a half. So that's the graph. The same graph, just shifted downwards. Now it passes through this point. Now, so this is f of 0, and that's 0. If you follow the same process that we did, starting from 0, you actually do get this, right? Start from 0 and then say between 0 and 1, it must be decreasing and concave up. So it must be like this. It's decreasing and concave up until 1. After 1, it must be increasing and concave up. So you can actually get this using the same process, but you don't need to because you already have this. So you just need to shift that. Any question? Okay, so I'm going to start the quiz if there is no question on this. Please leave all your notes aside. You cannot use any notes. You can use a calculator if you want, but just a calculator, nothing else. Yeah. Can I pass it around? I'll just give you 4. Thank you. Can you pass it around that way? But then it's going to ruin your weekend if I put it on, right?
Is it really? Wednesday.
Okay, thank you. No, actually, after this quiz, I'm still going to teach. So it's not that you can leave after this. It's just 15 minutes. I guess there's... We've already got one. Okay. Maybe I can keep it. Thank you. Thank you.
Quiz.
Now 15 minutes.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. So for problem 1, you do need a calculator. But if you don't have one, don't worry about it. Just leave it like that. Don't multiply. I'm not going to take off marks for not having a calculator. So it's just so if you don't have a calculator, just leave it as an expression. You don't have to compute it. Either one, yeah. Yeah, you can use either estimate for problem one. Doesn't matter which one you use.
One of them is enough. Yeah.
No, it does. Yeah. That's fine. You want to reset some time on the board?
No, I'm not quite sure.
Okay, that's fine. Yes, that's fine. Do you know the time? That's fine.
I have the time. I think I got to use name.
That's all right. That's fine. That's fine.
This is a screw for it. syllables.
It's on the syllables, yeah. Yeah, but
or is this a completed?
You need to find the integral.
Oh, the actual value.
Yeah.
Can
I just write my section time?
Yeah, that's fine. That's all right. Just one of them is enough. This is good. Yeah.
Okay. I actually don't know what to use, so
can
I just look
at it? You know the time?
No.
That's fine.
Okay, I'm fine.
That's okay. Yeah. Question clear, right? Find the average value.
Yeah.
So what's the average value? How do you find it?
Because like the thing is, I feel like the word function is the part that's bugging me. Because normally in class and in most of our homework, we've been doing it with this.
Yeah.
But then.
Yeah, that's it. That's how you do it.
Because in Oasis, I wanted to do that problem, and I did it like this. That's
this is the... No, this is not it. This is approximation. This is exact. Yeah.
If I use the expression this form, I don't need to compute it and calculate it.
Yeah. Just a second. So, is everyone done, or... Is it anyone who hasn't done yet? Please.
Is this what you meant by just leaving it like that? Do you have a calculator, or do you want us to do more?
No, that's fine. Yeah. Please keep the class quiet in case some people are still taking the exam, so it's unfair. Yeah. Okay.
Can I use lower or upper?
That's good. Yeah, I just finished the exam. I have to be on time. I just finished it.
This is the last couple of tests. That was the last one, so this is my tire. I'm like, as soon as I came in.
I mean, I just finished it. You have like 5 minutes, if you want. Yeah, fun. Yeah.
Can you say delta x? Do you mean like the change in or
delta x means the length of the subinterval. The length of each subinterval is delta x.
So that's just one section. So it's just
n. What's
it here?
No, n is the number of intervals.
Oh, okay, got it. For that sugar.
That's fine. Yeah. Is what?
Raul Gomez.
He's one of the TAs, yeah.
That's his name?
Yeah.
I don't know the section number.
That's fine. So. If you haven't done yet, if you're not done yet, please raise your hand. Just want to see who. Is it anyone? Okay, just. No one? Okay, you're done. Thank you. The next time I'll do it in the end of the class. I think that's going to work out better. Yeah. So, I'm going to talk about 6.2. So, I'm going to be talking about indefinite integrals. So last lecture, yeah, we saw that integral, definite, and this is a definite integral, right? We found this definite integral. So this is a definite integral. And the way we solved it was, we said that what's the antiderivative of, we used the fundamental theorem of calculus. So what's the antiderivative of 3x squared? It's x cubed. And then from 1 to 3, you're going to get 4 cubed minus 1 cubed, and that's 64 minus 1, that's 63. So this is called a definite integral. 3 cubed, yeah. Okay. This is 26. Yeah, thank you. So this is a definite integral. So indefinite integral, we just say what is integral of 3x squared dx, right? I don't specify the limits. In that case, by this, I mean what is the antiderivative of 3x squared. So this just means the general antiderivative of 3x squared. The general antiderivative is x cubed. This is one of the antiderivatives. The general antiderivative is this, because if you add n plus c, okay, that's fine, thank you. So if you add n plus c, it's going to be the same, right? The derivative of this is going to be, again, 3x squared. So this is called the indefinite integral. So if you know the indefinite integral, then you can find definite integral for any limits, right? If I know this, then in order to find definite integral, I just plug in the numbers, right? So indefinite integrals just mean the general antiderivative. This is the general antiderivative of that function for any c. C is a constant, can be any constant, any real number. Any question? So what is the integral of x squared dx? What is the antiderivative? What's the function that when I take the derivative of that function, I get x squared? Yeah, exactly. So if you have just x cubed, it's not going to work because x cubed is going to give you 3x squared, right? So it gives you the correct exponent, but the coefficient is wrong, right? The coefficient is 3. The coefficient is wrong. You get 3x squared. So I have to get rid of that 3. So I have to divide by 3 to get rid of that 3. So I have to divide this by 3, and then this is correct, right? So x cubed gives me the correct exponent, but the coefficient is wrong. It's 3 times that. So I divide by 3, and then I get the correct answer. Because now, if you take the derivative of this, you're going to get 3x squared times 1 over 3, and that's going to give you x squared. Plus c, exact. Thank you. Yeah. So in general, what if I have any n, integral of xn dx? So n could be any number. So now x2 gives me x3, so xn is going to give me 1 power more, right? So it's going to be xn plus 1. Because now if I take the derivative, I get the correct exponent. The derivative is going to be x to the n, right? N plus 1 minus 1. But again, the coefficient is wrong because I'm going to get n plus 1. If I take the derivative of this, I'm going to get n plus 1 times xn. So the derivative of xn plus 1 is n plus 1 times xn, right? It's not exactly xn. The exponent is right, but I don't want n plus 1 here, right? So I have to get rid of this n plus 1. So I divide here by n plus 1, 1 over n plus 1. And now it's correct, right? Now that's exactly antiderivative and then plus c. So now if you take the derivative of the right-hand side, this n plus 1 and that n plus 1, they cancel out, and you just get xn. So the derivative of the right-hand side is xn, right? This is for any n. Is there any question? So this is a special case of this. When n is 2, you get x2 is 1 over 3 x3. This is for general n, right? This is a special case of this. This is general case. This is general case, and this is a special case when n is 2. When n is 2, you get that. So I said this is true for any n, but actually that's not true. It's not true for any n. It's true for any n except when n is minus 1, right? If n is minus 1, this is not correct. So this is true for all n. Except n equals minus 1. So if n is minus 1, that formula is wrong. Why? Because if n is minus 1, the derivative of what do you get here? Minus 1 plus 1 is 0. X to the 0 is 1. The derivative of 1 is 0. But if I apply this formula, I'm going to get, this is correct, but this is wrong. Because I'm dividing by n plus 1, so I'm dividing by 0. This is correct. But this is not correct when n is minus 1, because if n is minus 1, you get x to the minus 1 dx is 1 over minus 1 plus 1. So that's 1 over 0 times x to the 0. So you get 1 over 0 times 1. And that doesn't make sense, right? 1 over 0 doesn't make sense. So this formula is wrong if n is minus 1. So I need another formula when n is minus 1. If n is not minus 1, this is the formula. If n is minus 1, what is the integral of x to the minus 1 dx? So this means x to the minus 1 just means 1 over x, right? So So what's the function that when you take its derivative, you get 1 over x? Yes, it's ln of x, ln of absolute value of x. So that's the function that its derivative is 1 over x. Ln of absolute value of x, its derivative is 1 over x. Okay, so why? So the question is, why did I put absolute value? So we know that the derivative of ln of x is 1 over x, right? But ln of x is not defined if x is negative, right? So this is true for, so if x is larger than 0. Because if x is less than 0, ln of x is not defined. Ln is defined only if x is larger than 0. So I need something else when x is less than 0, right? I need something else. So if x is less than 0, what can I do? So if x is less than 0, what's the derivative of ln of minus x? So if x is less than 0, minus x is larger than 0, right? If x is negative, minus x is positive. So this makes sense. Ln of minus x is defined. I cannot talk about ln of x because that's not defined. But I can talk about ln of minus x because minus x is positive. So what is this? I can use the chain rule, right? You can use the chain rule to find derivative. Derivative of ln of minus x is 1 over minus x. That's the chain rule times the derivative of minus x. What is the derivative of minus x? It's minus 1. Right? This is by the chain rule. 1 over minus x, because derivative of ln is that, times derivative of minus x. Derivative of minus x is minus 1. And now this gives you 1 over x. So, this means that antiderivative of 1 over x is ln of minus x, right? In this case, antiderivative of 1 over x is ln of x. So, in this case, antiderivative of 1 over x is ln of x. In this case, antiderivative of 1 over x is ln of minus x, right? So in that case, it's ln of x. In this case, it's ln of minus x. But, right, because antiderivative of 1 of x is ln of x. In this case, antiderivative of 1 of x is ln of minus x. That's the definition of antiderivative. In this case, x is positive. So ln of x means ln of absolute value of x, because when x is positive, x and absolute value of x are the same. So I can replace x by absolute value of x, because x is positive and x and absolute value of x are equal. In this case, x is negative, so, right, in this case, x is negative. So minus x is, again, absolute value of x, right? If x is negative, absolute value of x is minus x. So in this case, this is equal to ln of absolute value of x again. So in both cases, antiderivative of 1 over x is ln of absolute value of x. So that's the proof of this, right? So in both cases, if x is positive or negative, you do get that antiderivative of 1 over x is ln of absolute value of x. Sorry? Log? So, no. So, 1 over x, derivative of log of x is not 1 over x. Right? So the question is, can I replace ln by log? Right? So ln is a special case of log, right? Log base e is called ln, natural log. So the derivative of natural log is 1 over x. In general, derivative of log is not 1 over x. You can find a formula for it, yeah, but it's not 1 over x. Any question? So you don't need all this. This is a formula you can use. This is the form. This is the proof for this formula. Any question? Okay, so let's do that. So you said log of in general, right? What is in general? Let's say you have general log of x base some number a, right? What is its derivative? Let's say you can write that as log of x. So if a is e, so log of x base e, this is called ln of x, right? Ln of x just means log of x base e, and e is 2.7 something, right? But in general, if you have log of x base any number a, that's a general form of log, then you can write that as log of x base e divided by log of a base e. This is a property of log. And this means ln of e divided by, so log of x base e just means ln of e. And log of a base e means ln of e, ln of a. And so, I mean, sorry, log of x. So ln of x divided by ln of a. So now you can find the derivative, right? So d dx of log x base a is equal to, this is just a constant, right? 1 over ln of a is just a constant. And ln of x is 1 over x. So this is the derivative. So derivative of log is that, right? So for example, derivative of log base 10 is equal to 1 over ln of 10 times 1 over x. You can put any other number other than 10. So, if a is e, you get 1 over ln of e. Ln of e is 1, so that's 1 over 1, 1 over x. So if a is e, you get the derivative of ln is 1 over x. So that's what we had before. Yeah, that's just an aside, right? What is the integral of, let's say, 3x squared plus sine x dx? So one property of integral that's very useful is it's linear. So what does that mean? It means that you can write that as 3 times integral x squared dx plus integral sine x dx. So this is equal to that, and that's a very useful property, right? So constant you can bring it out, and then plus you can write two integrals. And now you can find the integral. That gives you 3 times integral of x squared is x cubed over 3, right? Plus integral of sine. What is integral of sine? It's negative cosine. Yeah. So negative cosine x. Cosine x, the derivative is minus sine. So minus cosine, you get 2 minus, and then that gives you a plus. So integral of sine is minus cosine. Plus c, yeah, thank you. Sorry? No, you don't need to do plus c in every step, right? So her question is, for each integral, do I have to put a plus c? So one plus c here and another plus c over there. And the answer is no, because you can put plus c here and then plus another constant d here, right? But then all you're doing is adding c plus d, and c plus d together is a constant. So this is enough, right? You can just put plus c in the end. Because constant plus constant is just a constant. You don't need to do it in every step. Yeah. Exactly. You can simplify, yeah. So this is just x cubed plus this, yeah. So what if, let's say you want to find integral of 1 plus x cubed over x, right, dx. So, as I said, this is a very useful property. If you have something plus something else, you can find the integral by finding the integral of each. So, multiplication is not good. Division is not good because I don't know if I have a division, then how can I find the integral? But if you have plus sign or minus sign, then that's good because then you can separate it into 2 integrals. So in this case, I wanted to make it something plus something. Then I can use that formula. And how can I do it here? I can actually do it here. I can write that as 1 over x plus x cubed over x dx. Right? And now it's in that form, something plus something else. And that's a good form, because then this is integral of first one plus integral of the second one. Integral of the first, so this is integral of 1 over x dx plus integral of x squared dx. So that gives you ln x, ln of absolute value x plus x cubed over 3 plus c. Right? What if you have 1 plus x cubed over square root x? You can do the same thing, right? You can do the same thing. This is 1 over a square root x plus x cubed over a square root x dx. 1 over a square root x just means x to the minus half. It's integral. X to the minus half plus x cubed over a square root x just means x to the 2 and a half, right? Dx. And then you can use the formula. The formula we had for xn, you can use it here. That's true for any n, even if n is not a natural number. So minus a half, that gives you x over minus a half plus 1 divided by minus a half plus 1. That's the formula, x to the n plus x to the n. So this is x to the n. That's for the first one plus x. The second one is x to the 2 and a half plus 1 divided by 2 and a half plus 1 plus c. So this is the integral. So x to any power, you can use that formula, x to the n. The integral of x to the n is x to the n plus 1 divided by n plus 1. Okay, thank you.
This has been a UC San Diego podcast. For more, visit podcast.ucsd.edu.